LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we'll be fielding your questions about your magical practice as we host a magical coaching Q&A. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com and FolkFaithMinistries.com in Western North Carolina. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome once again to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. Thrilled to have you here. If we're live and on the air, that means it's Monday night. Don't forget, Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. Go on over to their Facebook page, look for that Magic Mondays post, drop a comment on for your chance to win a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. Reverend James is out there, myself, and Miss Kat, and our good friend JD, who joins us regularly here on the show, and so many more. So definitely don't miss out on your opportunity for that free reading. They do it every Monday, folks. It's a great, great prize to win. All right. So we are back again, really excited. We're doing kind of our first fan favorite show of the year with a magical coaching Q&A. But before we get jumping into all the good stuff, I'm going to bounce it back over to you, Reverend James. You knew it was coming. How are things going upstairs?
Of course I knew it was coming. It bounces back to me every week. And it makes me think of that old song, like a rubber ball, I come bouncing back to you.
And Reverend James' CD will be out soon on iTunes.
If you've been listening to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, I made a small little announcement yesterday that I've been working on an oracle-style divination deck, and that's hopefully going to be debuting in next week, hopefully, if not the week after. And we'll apparently be doing a Oracle Hour on that at the Hoodoo Rootwork Hour on Sundays at some point. So keep a lookout for that. We also plan to do a pre-order with that too, so you might be able to get it a little cheaper than normal retail prices, and we'll let everybody know about that whenever that happens. Other than that, not doing a whole lot, trying to stay warm. We've had some really cold days, and we've also had some pipes freeze and things, had to replace a few pieces of pipe. Nothing major, luckily. But if you've been listening to us over the past few weeks, we've had a lot of pipe and water issues. hopefully that will not continue through the rest of the year. How about you, Reverend Art? What are you up to downstairs?
You know, we do have some new listeners tonight, and I'm so thrilled to have y'all joining us. Little backstory, you know, Reverend James and I, we are together partners, business partners, and he is my husband. So we do broadcast from the same home. However, we are on two different floors, so y'all don't get that crazy feedback that we've had that happen a couple of times, we'll just say. But, you know, like Reverend James said, it has been damn cold here in Western North Carolina, much as it is, you know, throughout a lot of the country in this past week. Combating exploding pipes and frozen well heads and making sure we have enough, you know, fuel gas to heat the house. It's been a lot of fun. But outside of that, you know, actually been doing a lot of research recently, delving into a lot of different aspects of, you know, folk traditions, especially here in the Appalachian region, hoping to really put out some really cool blog posts soon on our Facebook pages, as well as on folkconjure.com and folkfaithministries.com. Put in another order recently too, about a few days back. I'm going to have Figural Candles 2.0 getting added to our Etsy store, which Reverend James will share with everyone the link to the Etsy store. I love making candles. I absolutely adore making candles. It's so much fun. And, you know, we hand pour these just for you as they're ordered. So it really is a labor of love that we put into it. A lot of great stuff already out there. We'll be adding them to folkconjure.com. Hopefully this week is my goal. And really starting to grow that. Also, really excited to be putting together some classes. I'm going to be testing some new interfaces for different classes on tarot and spell work, you know, mojo bags, moving candle spells, all kinds of fun stuff, sugar jars, honey jars. So announcements for those are going to keep rolling out here as well. So if you're not already following our Facebook pages, our Instagram pages, definitely want to go out there and hit that like and follow button. A lot of good stuff coming. But as everybody knows, we really do enjoy our opportunities to interact with all of you who join us week in and week out here on Mystics and Mages. The chat is booming today. So excited. Hopefully y'all have a bunch of great questions for us. You know, in the past, we've done our reading paloozas that some of our fellow members from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, have joined us, our good friend JD, Miss L. Duvall, and we're little sneak peek, we're working on bringing the next reading palooza here in the next, hopefully, coming weeks, lining up some guests to come on and share those free readings with you. You know, it really is a great time. I know Reverend James and I did the first one, and we had a blast. JD and L, when they joined us, it was phenomenal. Everybody, you were posting their questions, you know, receiving, you know, four readings per, you know, for every question. You get from all different angles. And really loved watching in the chat as everybody was sharing their readings as well. You know, people were drawing cards, people were using their pendulums. So much fun. And Phyllis Margaret Gabor already excited. Reading Palooza, woohoo! So we'll definitely be bringing that here very, very, very soon. Gunning for February, maybe possibly a little bit of a Valentine's-ish week reading Palooza event. So mark your calendars and stay tuned, because reading Palooza comes around about once a quarter. We love doing it, and we'll announce it early so y'all can send in questions and let us know ahead of time. Fantastic. So tonight, magical coaching. You know, Reverend James and I, we have been members of AIR, the Association of Readers, Independent Readers and Root Workers, now for a few years, and have met some wonderful folks and, you know, participated also on the Lucky Mojo Forum, which, for those of you who are new and may not be familiar with it, definitely check out the Lucky Mojo Forum. So many magical questions answered, questions about products, suggestions for books, from almost every member of AIR has participated in answering these questions, and it's a free service for you. So go on over, sign up, and set up your account, and get in on all the fun. You know, Reverend James and I, we filter through here and there. Our good friend JD, who, surprised he hasn't joined us yet tonight, but he is the forum like guru out there. It's like a race against the clock when a question's posted to see who can get to it before JD. A lot of fantastic information there. And also for a lot of the questions and answers, how to's and well vetted information, take some time and run over to readersandrootworkers.org. That is the homepage for AIR. You'll see all of the members of AIR listed, and there are so many pages available of information on deities, divination tools. Just if it's of the magical and mystical realm, there's likely to be a page on it. It is curated and, you know, guided by Miss Kat Ironwood. She's helped us to be able to really bring this resource to everybody. So if you are out and looking for information, bookmark the site. Are so many ways to reach out to all of us there. So much information available right at your fingertips. And, you know, while it's not a, you know, we don't write exhaustive concordances for every topic, there is the information there is done in a way to be able to really springboard your learning. It allows you to adapt and understand and get a feel for so many different avenues of, you know, spiritualism, spirituality, different religions, how different religions view the same things and the same deities. I could go on and on.
It's often a very unbiased way of writing. We try to look at it from the outsider's point of view and the insider's point of view and present both of those in a lot of the writing. And also, you know, it's a place to spark an interest. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages, and I guarantee you there is something that you're interested in.
You know, Reverend James and I, we've every Tuesday, AIR puts out a brand new page. And, you know, going along with this theme of magical coaching, you know, these topics are, you know, painstakingly vetted. And the tech team on Tuesdays comes together and puts these articles out for everyone. Our good friend Nagashiva, who is, you know, so much the heart and soul of the tech team, supporting all of us and facilitating us to really be able to put this information out there. He's here with us in the chat tonight. Oh, and there's JD, who just missed all of the virtuous cheerleading that I was doing for you. So I guess you saved yourself some blushing today, JD. But, you know, Papa Newt, Reverend James, myself, Miss Kat, Nagashiva, we really, and the rest of the members of AIR, these four pages have been coming together now for well over 10 years.
Don't forget Miss Michael and Dr. Jeremy Weiss.
I was actually just, I was about to start continuing on the list. We've all written countless articles, you know, edited to perfection by Miss Kat. It really is your ultimate magical go-to. Between the Lucky Mojo forum for the Q&A and the AIR website, so many opportunities for learning and growth and expansion and understanding. You know, it really, they spark conversations and really kind of work to build the spiritual community. And that's a lot of, you know, the focus for Reverend James and myself is spearheading that building of community, creating safe places for people to grow, to understand, to test theories and things. Can't say enough. Really can't. Did you have anything you'd want to add here, Reverend James?
No. You covered it well.
Well, I appreciate that. So again, so thrilled to have everybody here joining us tonight. And, you know, we're going to pause here and we're going to get our station announcements up and running and be back to start diving into all of those burning questions that I know are going to come flying at us. And I really hope we're going to have time to answer them all. Reverend James, take it away.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Thursdays, 4 to 5. all times Pacific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, January 23rd on the Crystal Silence League in syndication will be the topic of the Astral Tower. And Tuesday, January 23rd on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of protection magic. And Wednesday, January 24th on the Now You Know show in syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of Psalms to Quell Your Enemies and Cinnamon. And Sunday, January 28th at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man with special guest Brother Christopher will bring the topic Visions and Dreams for Luck and Success. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And, you know, I was a little remiss in my coaching exhortations during the first half. I actually missed the Hoodoo Heritage Festival learning portal that is also out there for anybody that is interested in taking a course. The Association of Independent Spiritualist Churches and AIR have put together the hoodooworkshops.com site where all of the different presentations that have been put on over the time since the Hoodoo Heritage Festival went virtual have been placed there. Lots of really great classes that you can learn directly from, you know, some of the best hoodooists of our time. Reverend James has classes out there, myself. There are classes from Miss Cat and Papa G, who has joined us in the chat. You'll find JD out there, Miss Heidi Holton, Miss Robin, with some fantastic classes on cursing and the use of water in its different forms in hoodoo. Again, I could go on and on. Do yourself a favor. It's another page to bookmark, hoodooworkshops.com. And I would be remiss, our good friend Papa G's joined us. Papa G also has a YouTube channel, which if Papa G, toss it on in the chat for us. Aroma G's Botanica in Nashville, Tennessee, hosts the Tennessee Folk Magic Festival every year. Honestly, an absolutely amazing event. Reverend James and I have had the opportunity to attend and present at the Folk Magic Festival. The classes are available for free out on Aroma G's YouTube page that have been hosted there over the past several years. There's the link, youtube.com/@AromaG's, AromaGs.
Another great resource. I also want to mention that that each of the workshops at Hoodoo Workshops is $25. It's very affordable. And if you want to buy individual ones, they are the $25. And we also have packages of the entire Hoodoo Heritage Festival that year. So they're packaged by year. And you can get those at a little bit of a discount as well. We're also very soon putting together some old camcorder recorded things from the ones that were done in person, the Hoodoo Heritage Festivals that were done in person. Some lost footage has been found, and we are
not Blair Witch style.
No, but we will soon be digitizing those and having those available too. So that'll be a really nice gem and to keep your eye out for.
Yeah, that was an exciting find when Nagashiva and Miss Cat just stumbled across these old DVDs and to have those joined in. All right. So I'm going to, you know, while we're here, we have our good friend JD. We have Papa G joining us here in the chat. If either of you would like to join us on the air for Magical Coaching Q&A, just shoot us a message on the side and we'll get you dialed in. But from there, let's start taking questions. We did have several questions sent to us by Messenger leading up to this show from some of our friends that are not able to join us. Who wants to go first, Reverend James? Do you want to take it away?
I can start with our friend Balkan Diviner's first question. He sent us a few, so we'll start him off since he's been a very loyal listener and answer his questions that unfortunately, because he's in Romania, is unable to attend the show tonight. Usually he does try to stay up, but he's not here tonight. But his first question is, how difficult do you find coaching students from an entirely different culture? And why do you find it difficult, or why do you find it easy?
This is actually a really interesting question. And kind of a little, it kind of ironically, as it happens on this show fairly frequently, goes along with a little bit of the conversation that's going on in the chat, talking about teachers and classes that are available. And Dr. Sweets mentioned that quality is the key. Really being able to bridge cultural divides, language barriers, having that patience to really bring those things together. You know, it, while some who are maybe less dedicated to actually wanting the individual to reach their peak potential might just say, you know what, F it. I'm really not interested in dealing with this. You know, as a magical coach, as a teacher, I personally welcome and am thrilled to have these opportunities to kind of bridge those cultural divides. You know, it's not just teaching isn't a one-way relationship. While there is that, you know, overall sense of that top-down teacher-student feeling, you know, it really brings the opportunity to breathe new life and to understand things from a new perspective, which really diving in, it removes that difficulty when the teacher themselves are going in with that same kind of sense of openness that you really, as a teacher, want from your students. And that's one thing that I will say for anybody who is out there and searching for a magical coach, a magical teacher, somebody to work as a to work with in that, you know, kind of tutelage sort of way. You know, if that relationship is feeling strained, regardless of if it's culture or personality or what, do yourself a favor and find somebody that you are more compatible with. That's my take on it, is really the quality of the teacher shines when cultural divides can be bridged. Did you want to add anything to that, Reverend James?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I want to say this. Any of the questions that we're dealing with tonight, it doesn't have to be about magical coaching. If you have questions about anything, that's pretty much what we're doing. We're offering magical coaching as well as talking on magical coaching. But do I find it difficult to coach students from a different culture? Not really, but that's just maybe because of the person that I am. I have studied many different traditions and things, some that, you know, are rather open, some that are closed, semi-closed. And what I mean by that is kind of like Buddhism. You can certainly go in there. Anybody can get an empowerment and can do certain practices, but you have to have that empowerment to do them. If you go and look at those hoodoo workshops that we were talking about, I have done classes from a Buddhist perspective. I have done classes from a Taoist perspective. And I also, everybody that comes to me knows that I do hoodoo, obviously. if you've read my bio at AIR, you also know that I come from a Wiccan and a Druid background. I have a Celtic ancestry. So I've kind of dabbled and mixed and put together and worked in many different traditions. I find it easy to work with somebody from a different tradition or a different thought by talking to them about it, because like you were saying, it's not necessarily a one-way street. I can learn from them as well. And once I kind of get an idea of where they're coming from, it becomes a lot easier, and that can be quickly found out. Why do I think that? I guess that explains both the do I find it difficult and why one way or the other.
Excellent. All right. So who is next? For those of you in the chat, feel free. You got those burning questions, drop them down, let us know, and we will do our very best to keep up with them.
Well, JD did make a comment in the chat here. He says, teachers and philosophy is often influenced by the system. Teaching someone who does not understand that system can make it harder. Their traditions can also influence how they think and feel, and those can affect their work. That's a good point.
It's an excellent point. And JD, from the realm of academia, soon to be Dr. JD, always has great points and additions to chip in with. There was actually a question a little bit further back in the chat that Robert had posted. You know, he says a couple ancestor family members were tutored by John Dee. I always wonder if any of the things they worked on were meant to be generational. Do you have any insight on that? You know, that's a really intriguing sort of question. For myself as a coach, it's always my hope events, you know, that things that are taught, things that are learned, don't end with the student, that they do continue on, that they are inspired to, you know, whether it's a pay it forward situation, or, you know, they go on to develop a professional practice of their own. And a lot of the, it's been my experience that a lot of the elder teachers, for the most part, I should say, that there were definitely some of them out there that were a little very much, no, this is mine, don't touch it sort of people. But I do think in large part, a lot of the elder teachers were these things that they knew, they learned, they gleaned, they intuited, they divined, would continue beyond that instance of, you know, someone sitting in a class or sitting in a teaching session. Definitely something, especially if you still if any of these individuals are still with you, I would highly recommend reaching out, you know, kind of asking, you know, asking those questions to open the dialogue, to bring the learning through and bringing it forward. Any thoughts, Reverend James?
No, I mean, I agree. You know, many of the things that people do and the reason that they go through the struggles that they go through is because they want something to be passed on. I mean, I can't speak necessarily for these people that learned from him and what his, you know, what he thought at that time. But I would imagine that if he taught it, he would want it to continue. The things that I teach to people, I would like for it to continue because it made a difference for me. And the reason that I teach the things that I do is I wish I had had someone to teach me that at a time when I needed it instead of having to need it and then having to search for it, if that makes sense.
That is an excellent point, too, is, you know, it is difficult to find the teachers. So when these opportunities exist, if you have the opportunity to teach, to share, to continue tradition, take it. Dr. Sweets in the chat posed a very interesting question, and I'll have you jump on it first, Reverend James. Because some folks use the LMC Hoodoo course for the mechanics and the products, but then return to their cultural magical practices. Many have told me that hoodoo remediations don't always work universally across other magical traditions. What do you guys think about that?
I'd have to ask for a little more clarification, because what I think you're saying is that they're taking the products, they're taking the quote unquote rituals, the way that things are done, and using it in, for instance, say Wicca. And they find that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do because they're Wiccan. If that's what you mean, I would say, well, you know, you're not using it in the way that it was taught. You know, there's a reason that, for instance, you know, some teach you'll go to one root worker and they'll say, for instance, say that you have you need a cleansing. You go to one root worker and one of them will say, okay, I want you to take a bath for a spiritual bath using hyssop for 3 days, and do it on the decrease of the moon and et cetera, et cetera. And then you may later on go to another person that you think that you still have maybe the same problem. You go to another person and they say, do it for 13 days. You know, you have to follow the directions. And most often whenever people don't see results, they're not following their directions. There's a reason why things are done the way they're done. Does that mean that it won't work if you every time, that if you take something from one tradition and try to mush it into another one? No, not at all. That means it's definitely possible. But the person that's telling you what to do has had experience insofar as that they've done it and it worked for them. And they know that doing it this way works. And there have been other people that have also done it that way who have also said, hey, this works. So they're in that aspect, I would say that it depends on really the person, depends on the problem. But most often I would say it's just because they didn't follow the directions. You know, they're trying to mush it into something that it's not. Like, for instance, I wouldn't say that because in Wicca that, you know, an herb does this thing, that I try to go to do hoodoo and I'm going to try to say, well, this herb does it in Wicca, it's for love, but, you know, in hoodoo, it's for cursing, but that's okay. I'm doing the hoodoo part, but, you know, I'm going to use this Wiccan meaning. No, you're working within a tradition, and then in that tradition, that spirit of whatever, this is the way I see it, that spirit and that herb says, okay, you're working with me in this particular way. I'm going to act this way. I don't know if that makes sense or not. So I hope I answered your question, at least from one perspective. What about you, Art?
No, it made perfect sense to me. But really, I think a lot of it truly goes to working the prescription as prescribed versus trying to force it into a mold where it might not fit. True, there. I mean, hoodoo in so many ways can be very adaptable. I mean, it in and of itself is, you know, a combination of multiple different religio-spiritual paths. So to say taking something from quote-unquote hoodoo and moving it into another tradition, it's just not going to work or don't always work. I really strongly sort of feel that there's something in the – it's more prescription to performance than it is to it not working. That's kind of my take on that.
I like that you point out and you say prescription, because that's actually a really good point. If you look at it, root workers are often kind of compared to like lawyers or medical doctors, you know, that we try to do things on behalf of clients and things in that aspect. But if you look at it, from that word, the prescription, that you're given a prescription by a root worker. If you got a prescription from your doctor that says you need to take this pill of 200 milligrams every day for 30 days, and if you don't, then some infection's going to get worse, you know, then you have to follow those rules. And if you don't, then you're going to get that you didn't want. And I kind of say that kind of is the same way. And just because one person gets something doesn't mean that it's going to work for you. So if you and your friend have supposedly, for instance, the same problem, and you go to the same root worker, but that one root worker tells you one thing, tells your friend another thing, there's a reason for that. It could be the energies that's around them. It could be that the spirits that are working with them. Any of these other things could be at play. Just because, you know, it worked for one person doesn't mean it's going to work for another. Follow directions. That's all I really have, what it comes down to.
And, you know, in the chat, JD throws in a couple of really great points. You know, hoodoo versus magical tradition. Well, if it violates your personal rules, such as harm none, and you use a product to harm, then it'll conflict. You know, also, work is pushing things in your favor. There is no promise of success, but, you know, that's why we use divination and then work with purpose. And he also says, I would also argue the person may lack faith in the work. I like it, in the next point, I would also add the expectations, media and such, have ruined people's understanding of magic. Now people think it's all Harry Potter or the craft. Things take time, effort, and energy. How much of that is being put in the work? And Papa G, another great point to add. The root worker, you know, was adjusting the method according to the client's own path.
Exactly.
There's a lot to, you know, that question. But to blanket say that something's not going to work across the barriers, quote unquote, between different paths, I'm just going to say I call bullshit. Troll T, great question. Are there youngest clients for coaching? Do you take children for coaching them on magic or just over 18? You know, this is something that I've seen argued extensively recently in several Facebook groups, actually. Did you want to take it away first, Reverend James?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I have two half-sisters. They were very young when I started to teach them things. Yes, we were family, but realize half-sisters, that means they have a different one of the different parents. So their mother was different. She was not my stepmother. It's strange. But she was also into that kind of things and just didn't know how to go about teaching those things. So she asked me because she knew that I was knew what I was talking about. I've also had many friends that have children now that I've gotten older and that have said, hey, you know, I do magic and I know, or I do, you know, these things in this kind of tradition. I know that you're familiar with it. I'm not really sure. I've tried to explain it to my kids, but I don't know how to do that. Can you help me? Absolutely. Of course, always these things are done in front of the parent. So I would say yes, but in a professional aspect, probably not. I would probably require some signing of paper to ensure that they want their child taught this specific thing, just because of the things that could go wrong legally. But is there a hard and fast rule that says, you know, you can only teach people this old? No, I don't think so.
You know, for myself, if I had one criteria, is I do prefer to teach those that are 18 or older. But like Reverend James said, you know, there's something to be said about different levels of maturity. You know, individuals mature at different rates. If someone is under the age of 18 and their parent or guardian is amenable to them taking classes, you know, especially group setting classes, things of that nature, you know, sign whatever disclosures needed to be. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. For myself, though, I think in a lot of cases, the younger the child, you know, I really think that a lot of learning needs to start at home. And if the parents are of that path and want their children to also have an understanding, that initial learning needs to be done from the family. Really, I personally don't think I would go much younger than high school age myself. Just for the argument of, you know, really kind of building into that maturity stage, because back to JD's point, it's not a game. It's not Harry Potter. It's not, you know, blah, 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 levy, blah, blah, whatever, and waving a stick and poof, some shit's going to happen. No, we're really affecting change. And there needs to be an understanding and an ability to have the respect for that. There are some things that I think are that there might be too young to really.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, I wasn't meaning like, for instance, you know, I'm gonna have somebody come say, oh, I want you to teach my child hoodoo, and the first thing we're going to talk about is raccoon penis bones. No, probably gonna leave that one out. But you know, focus on the blessings. On
that's
a, you know,
that's in Hoodoo 201. No, I think we're both of the same mind, where, you know, that it maturity level is really where that needs to land. You know, and coaching doesn't necessarily have to be one-on-one in person either. distance coaching, virtual coaching. If the pandemic taught us nothing, is that a lot of stuff can be done over the interwebs.
Let's face it, most of our clients are, you know, people that aren't necessarily in our backyard. So most all of my clients are, at the moment anyway, are virtual. So if I wasn't able to do that virtually, we'd have a problem. And I think they would too. They'd be quite upset. I have a lot of people that come to me and say multiple times, "Hey, I'm doing this now. What do I need to do?"
While my Aquarian side definitely loves getting together, you know, hanging out with somebody one-on-one, or, you know, teaching classes in groups, or just even being in a group share. You know, I've been a part of Reiki shares. I've been a part of reading shares, things of that nature they're learning opportunities. And everybody's just, you know, give and take all throughout the course of it. You know, there's not really a differentiation at this stage in the game when it comes to technology. I do think that there needs to be the visual sense, though, whether it does need to be a video situation, at least in some cases, so you can watch technique, so you can watch different things of that nature.
Or be very good at explaining things in explicit detail.
And actually, you know, I'm going to continue on with Troll T's next question. That he asks, what types of commitments do you need in order to engage in serious coaching over a long term? If an individual actually is respectful of the work, of the time, of the effort being put in, you know, that's what I ask. I'm not going to have them sign a contract that says you will be, you know, here for the third Thursday of every month and twice on Tuesdays, sort of malarkey. For myself, and I think it does go for more of your better teachers, is, you know, respect our time, respect the efforts that we've put in, respect the experience that we've gathered, and we want to share with you. That would be where I'm seeking commitment. It's kind of like, recently I heard tell of a root worker that requires you to sign a damn contract that you will not go to any other root workers, and otherwise it will totally FUBAR the workings that you're doing with them and all other kinds of horse shit. You know, that's something else to watch out for. If you are working with someone and they're pretty much beer-heading you, saying they are the end-all be-all, walk away. Those gatekeepers are...
I wouldn't even say it's gatekeeping. To me, that's just a little bit more on the bully side. You know, if you don't do what I tell you to do, then I'm going to curse you, basically.
I'm going to take back every magic that I've done for you. All right. just throwing that out there. Was there something you wanted to add about the commitments to teaching?
Yeah. For me, that would be completely dependent on the way that I'm coaching this person. And that would be, what I mean by that is, am I doing this on a client root worker basis, completely quote unquote professional and business transaction? In that case, I don't care if you're committed or not. You come to me, you ask for me to teach you something. I teach you whether you do it or not. That's on you. You know, you paid me to teach you and I did that. As far as, you know, the other way that I would even, you know, consider what we're talking about to relate would be if I took on like an apprentice. And in that aspect, you know, I'm not, I'm probably not charging them to teach them. I'm trying to teach somebody to continue the thing that, you know, what I do for whenever I pass away. Somebody to, you know, pick up the baton, so to speak. I'm not really necessarily doing that right now. Probably maybe in the future may do something like that. But in that aspect, yes, I might require somebody to prove to me that, you know, I'm not wasting my time on you. You know, my time is valuable. You know, everybody's time is valuable. I wouldn't want to spend years on somebody teaching them everything that I know and then for them to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore and I'm moving to, you know, Laos or something.
Way to pull Laos out of absolutely thin air.
Very proud. It just came to me because I thought of King of the Hill. I don't know.
Nice. You know, I kind of want to jump over to one of our write-in questions. An interesting one that actually a lot of people do ask is how long to wait between having readings on a certain situation. I definitely get this question a lot. And I'll give you first dibs, Reverend James.
I hate to say it, but a lot of the answers that come to magical coaching is it depends on the person. You know, everybody's different. Everybody has a different way of doing things and different way of learning things and understanding things.
You know, let me put it this way. Okay, so you pose, we'll use Reading Palooza as an example. A guest poses a question.
Right.
And we had the last Reading Palooza. We were joined by JD. We were joined by El Duval. And it was Reverend James and myself. And so you had four different perspectives reading on the same situation. Now, how this ties to how long to wait between psychic readings, you know, there's no litmus test for this. There's no hard and fast rule that says you must wait 3 months between readings. What it comes down to, one of the main things I want to caution people is don't break the bank hopping from reader to reader in order to get the answer that you want.
Oh, well, see, I think that's a completely different thing there. You're getting on to, you know, hopping with people, you know. That's already a big problem. Don't do that to begin with. If you're going to one reader, I would say talk to your reader. You know, you keep them informed. Tell them when things change. You know, if you haven't given time for things to happen, then absolutely don't go get another reading. It wouldn't make sense. An example of that would be you go to a root worker and you say, you know, I'm having trouble getting a job. And I need you to help me get a job, a good, steady job. And they do some root work for you, or they do a reading for you. They figure out that your situation is able to be helped with root work, and usually from the reading get a glean on what to do. They then do that, and then, you know, they give you some things that you need to do at home, which you probably won't be able to do, like, necessarily within 24 hours. So, you know, you're not going to wake up the next morning and then call that reader back and say, well, I haven't got a job yet. What else do I need to do? What, you know, you haven't even given it time to work, given it time to do anything. You know, you haven't even went out and, you know, filled out a job application, let alone turned it into someone for them to even read it. You know, it's not just going to fall into your lap like the Hogwarts.
Well, hell, even updating your resume in this example.
Right.
You know, if you haven't put any effort in, if there's been nothing done to change the energy, you're not going to want to go the next day to reader number two and then go, oh, well, that was great. Now I'm going to go on to reader number three. Now, you know, depending on the situation, I recommend spot checks. You know, if it's a longer term situation, maybe give it 3 months, maybe give it 6 months. You know, there are some people that, you know, they will do a reading once a year. They'll, you know, they want to know the year ahead, day after New Year's, January 1st, they have their standing appointments. Give me that year ahead. You know, some people will use, you know, the lunar calendar, you know, the Chinese New Year. Some people will use their birthdays, you know, and then they'll do like their 6 month birthday, mid-year sort of check-ins. It really depends on the situation itself. If it's something that you're actively working on, maybe a little bit more frequently, but I don't really see any outrageous benefit to maybe anything much less than a month in between.
I was just about to say that. That's a good, yeah.
You know, to give stuff a chance to work, people. Give yourself time to acclimate. Give yourself time to take the actions you need to move that dial. And once you've started, this actually could get onto that conversation of, you know, signs and omens and things of that nature, is, you know, seeing movement in different situations. But, you know, really allow yourself that opportunity to breathe and take in and acclimate to whatever was unveiled during that reading.
I was just going to say that anything that's not moving very fast, like for instance, say that, you know, somebody just got arrested, you know, or somebody just got in a car wreck or something like that, and you need, and they're being rushed to the hospital, you don't know what's going on, you know, you might go to a reader that day and then maybe a couple days later, because you might want to see what's going on with the surgery right after. Some things like that that are moving really fast, you might have a, you know, one or two, at most maybe three readings in a smaller time period, less than a month. But other than that, I would say a month is a good indicator of when, if nothing's changed or you're not seeing anything come about from what you've done, then go back and get a reading, see what's keeping that from happening, see the things that what you're not doing that you need to do, et cetera. But I mean, I've had clients that I have worked with for a couple years, and they would come to me every 3 months roughly and say, okay, you know, this is what's going on. Everything that you told me last time's happened. So I want to see what's going on for the next 3 months. And then in the midst of something going on, you know, we get a reading and something, maybe something negative comes up and me to do some root work on it. They might come and get a reading every other, you know, every month at that point for a 3 month stint at most, you know, just to see where things are going, how things are moving, et cetera. I think a month is a good number.
You know, it's kind of like this, you know, for instance, today's Monday. Just to kind of put this into kind of a practical sense as well. And we're going to continue with getting a job thing. You have a job interview on Wednesday. You want to do some root work or something along the lines of, you know, boosting your chances to get the job. You're not going to start a honey jar on Monday for a job interview on Wednesday. Why?
Very
honey
good
jars
point.
Aren't the fastest thing to work. You're going to, I mean, for those of you that have done honey jars, you know, you know, most, you light the candle on top, you get it off and running. I actually, you know, even shared a spell on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour last night about blessings for blessing strangers. You know, you light that candle on top. You know, you could make that honey jar and you can light a damn stick of dynamite on top of it, and it is not going to make that Wednesday any better for you in that amount of time. Take that into consideration with your readings.
Yeah, you definitely need to, well, even root work, you know, you need to keep that in mind with your root work, because it's not a good idea to go to it, like in that same example, you don't want to go to a root worker and say, hey, I've got a interview, you know, tomorrow. What kind of root work can you do for me? No, everything's pretty much set. I mean, there are some things that you can do to maybe give you a leg up. You know, put some bay leaf in your shoe when you go. You know, maybe you know, take a little a taste of sugar so that your words are sweet to the people that hear them. There are small things that you can do to give you a little bit of an edge. But if you've already, you know, screwed up your resume, and you know you didn't go get a nice suit, and or the clothes that you do have, you didn't, you know, iron before you get it's done. If you've already sent in the paper where you've applied to the job, you've already set the things in motion. You need to come to a root worker, or you need to do root work before everything gets set in motion for the thing that you want, so that you can get on the right foot. Otherwise, you're having to undo things or work with things that aren't as, I don't want to say as strong, but I would just say that you're not giving it the energies enough time to move things.
And that's all we got to say about that. You know, actually, another one of the write-in questions that probably I'd have to say is very near the top five regular questions that I get. And I want to throw out there for our listeners, disposal of ritual remains, how to properly dispose of your spell work. Huge.
Or deploy.
Which there is a difference. A lot of people don't, you know, really draw that distinction between, you know, deployment and disposal. Two very different things. You know, I have to hearken back to a friend of mine who was constantly, like, aggravatingly constantly doing spells to draw in money, whether that be prosperity, like straight prosperity work, doing, you know, job work. I almost said work. Go. It's been a long day. You know, things of that nature. And she came to me and was like, why do these never seem to work for me? And, you know, I was honest. We talked technique, we talked placement, we talked ingredients, you know, use of figural candles versus regular candles, timing of the moon, timing of the clock, so many different aspects, astrological signs. And those that know me know Reverend Art doesn't get too deep into astrology. Could not for the life of me figure out what the hell was going on here. And then one day I was at her house and one of her workings was coming to a close, and went out. Okay, fine. Candles burned out. We're sitting there talking, you know, a little wisp of smoke. And she says, oh, I'm going to need to take care of this now. Took the whole damn thing and threw it out.
Define throw it out.
Tossed it right in the garbage.
Okay.
That the realization of why this wasn't working couldn't have hit me harder in the face than somebody like with a brick.
Throwing your work in the trash. Everything you just did, throw it away.
Disposal of
garbage.
Exactly. And this is something that a lot of practitioners, especially, you know, newer practitioners, fail to really kind of think about. Is, you know, it's kind of, last week when JD was on, we were talking about crafting spells, and we talked about working from the end forward, understanding how you're going to dispose of what you're doing is really a good first step. You know, once I'm done with this work, what am I going to do with it? Is it done? Then we're talking disposal. Is it something that is intended to continue to work? In this case, you know, she lived in an apartment. She had a little balcony, one much bigger than like two sidewalk squares. But, you know, what we ended up doing was she loved potted plants. So we took these works and, I mean, she has a green thumb like you wouldn't believe. I think she can bring like a twig back from the dead. But we started to put these prosperity works, these abundance works, into the potted plants and setting them on her little balcony. And the next thing you know, she's putting out resumes. She's getting calls from recruiters. She goes and plays little scratch-off tickets. She's getting hits. You know, she didn't hit millions, but she, you know, enough to make it worth. She was able to go out for a few really nice dinners that she also took me on, I will say. A little bit of gratitude. But this is something, you know, we've talked about with sneaky tricks over the years and different things too, you know, finding a way to deploy these works rather than dispose of them is going to make a difference. Things like if you're drawing something in, if you have a home, if you're trying to draw in peace, if you're trying to draw in love, if you're trying to draw in money, if you're trying to draw in any of those positive things, protection into your home, if you do a spell, you're not going to bury it out back. You're not going to throw it in the trash. Find a place to put it out front. Bury it in your front yard. Bury it some, you know, if it's protection, try to bury it as close to by your front door as you can. Deploy it where it matters most. Why in the front yard? Because you're inviting these things in. What do you bury in the backyard? The crap you're trying to get rid of. What you're working to move past, move beyond. And I know, Reverend James, you have other things to toss in with deployment and disposal.
Well, I don't personally put things in the back to get rid of them because I don't want them anywhere near me. If I'm getting rid of them, it's going in a river. Things that I want to keep goes in the backyard. The only thing that I really have to say in this is that if there's, you know, if you live in a desert, don't do a spell that needs a river. You know, if you're in the middle of a concrete jungle, don't use a spell that needs a river. Do something else. If you cannot take the time to drive out to a river wherever one is closest to you, then don't do that spell. Don't, because, you know, I've had some people that come to me and say, hey, you know, I finished this sugar jar and I'd like to get rid of it. You know, is it okay if I flush it down the toilet? Well, are you telling that person that they're shit? You know, do you want them to get sick and curse them? And then otherwise, no, don't do that. You know, the only time that you want to put something in the toilet is if you know, you're cursing somebody, really. You know, not a lot of people want to be in a toilet, let's just say.
I don't think anybody does, to be honest,
yeah.
But we'll leave that as it is. But, you know, things that you're really trying to cast aside, to get away from you, you know, these are things you're not going to necessarily bury in your yard or anything slowly, you know, even close to your home. Take it to said river, cast it off to have those things carried away from you.
I like what JD has said in the chat real quick. I want to touch on this. He says, don't deploy a spell to send someone in a lake. To send someone away in a lake, because lakes don't move. That's a very good point. Because if you throw it there, they're going to stay. Don't take it somewhere where there are places where the tide comes in and out either. Because if you do that, they're going to come in and out of your life. They'll go away for a little bit, then they'll come back. They'll go away for a little bit, and then they'll come back. You don't want an ebb and flow for things that you want to get rid of. There are reasons why things go into rivers. There are reasons why things go into lakes. There are reasons why things go into oceans. You know, another thing that he said just a few messages up. Disposal and deployment is symbolic. How does this act support the work, and how does it symbolically support the work? So just like we were just talking about, you know, if you put it in a tidal pool, then it's gonna stay there. It's gonna keep coming back. It'll go away for a little bit, and then it'll come back, and then it'll go away, and then it'll come back. You put it in a river, it's going to go away and not come back. You know, things don't go upstream except for some fish.
See, I told you, JD, you should have jumped on the radio with us tonight. You know, he actually, I mean, more great points. You know, bury something in a graveyard to kill it. Deploy it to the west or at a crossroads to send it away to the east to draw. This is a way to especially with like, spiritual baths. If you're doing like a cleansing bath, you're cleansing this off of you. You want to take it when you take that symbolic bit of bath water out, you'll take it and you'll throw it towards the setting sun. Sun rises in the east, sets in the west. You throw it to the west. You know, really think through what you're doing to dispose of your work, and don't think and very critically think of how you're going to deploy your work. Unlike my friend who spent several years throwing out her works, don't accidentally dispose of what you've intended to deploy.
Dr. Sweet says, it's been said to me at least 15 years ago that you can dispose of anything in the trash, but put the remains in a paper bag with an orange cut in half added. The orange does something. I didn't think to ask back then. I don't do it, but what do you think? I think that is very interesting. I wouldn't do that. The only thing that I can even stretch to think is that they're saying you putting the orange in there, a citrus fruit, they might equate with cleansing, and that in that aspect they're cleansing the remnants, and that it becomes nothing and it's okay to throw away. No. Especially if you're doing something with like a doll baby or a figural candle that you've baptized in the name of someone. If you've baptized something in the name of someone, then you've made that object that person. And unless you do an unbaptism, then that thing is still there, and all you're doing is throwing them in around a bunch of garbage, and they might be able to smell oranges. That would be about it. The lady was of Latin background, maybe Santeria. Well, you know, I can't speak to that particular tradition. that being the religion that you're speaking about, though, I mean, it's a very symbolic religion, and the things that they do is very symbolic. I can't imagine anyone saying to take something and throw it in the trash unless it was for cursing, but I would have to say you'd have to ask that person or somebody else in that tradition. What does an unbaptism consist of? Maganda asks, what does an unbaptism consist of? It's basically saying, you know, that you're doing what you did in reverse, really. Instead of whenever you give something a baptism, you take, you know, well, at least the way I do it is I take some holy water and I wash the thing that I'm going to do it in, or I spritz it or whatever, or I might use incense to cleanse it if it's a cloth or something like that. And then I take holy oil and I put it on my thumb and I do the sign of the cross on their forehead of whatever it is. And I say, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, you are, I baptize you in the name of so-and-so. When I get done working whatever that is and I'm no longer wanting to affect them in any way, I take whatever that was and I do the same thing. It's just I do it with different phrasing and with the intention of taking what I turned it into and taking that out of it and allowing it to become free again. And basically I just say,
releasing.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, you are no longer so-and-so. I unbaptize you in the name of so-and-so. You are no longer this person to me, or to this doll, to this candle, etc.
You're no longer bound to this item.
And then if you want to, that in that case, I would say, you know, you might be able to throw that away, because then it's just candle wax at that point. There's nothing that's supposed to be carried on. There's nothing that's supposed to, you know, that's still attached to anybody. But you definitely don't want to do that beforehand. There's a lot of people that say whenever you get rid of like a cloth doll that you want to burn it. So you definitely don't want to do that whenever the person is still baptized. You're going to set them on fire. Talk about a hot foot. but, you know, you want to simply do that. And then with a candle, it's fairly easy because you're burning it down. It's already done and it's no longer a candle anymore. Unless you're just using the candle as a doll, in which case then you'd want to melt it down or something like that. But you want to undo whatever it is. So if you did it in a cloth, then you'd want to undo all of your stitches, you know, take everything apart, pull all the stuffing out after you've done the unbaptism.
Excellent points. You know, there's a couple of quick questions. And like I said, we're almost running out of time here, so I'm going to try and get some quick questions through. Earlier on, Troll T had asked, is in coaching, are there levels of advancement? Are some things better for expert practitioners? What I'm going to say to this is no teacher is going to be the end-all, be-all for esoteric knowledge. They may have a taste of things, but if you come across anybody who says that they are an expert in all things, walk away. I have taken on many clients. I know when we get to a certain point, it's time for a different perspective, or it's time for someone who might be a little bit more adaptive to that individual's growth. You know, whether that might be handing somebody off to possibly, you know, someone who is an initiate of like Palo or a Buddhist, you know, somebody that can actually guide along those paths. You know, there are times to know when to move on. One thing, I mean, Reverend James and I both, we will be the first person to say, hey, we recognize your need. We are not your person. but we will
but
find
we can help
you
find
somebody,
somebody.
That can do this. And we will. And they will be somebody who have been vetted and will not give you a lot of bullshit and be on the take. You can guarantee that if it's somebody that we've endorsed, there's somebody that you're going to be able to be comfortable with. So I did want to toss that in.
I want to speak on what Dr. Sweet asked here. He said, if you break the leg of a baptized doll unintentionally, what do you do? Glue it back, then unbaptize it? Laugh out loud. That just speaks to your how you look at your work. To me, and also the way what JD said, I mean, it is very much a sign, but to me, it's a sign of you're not paying attention. You're not treating this work with the respect that it needs.
Yep.
If you have a doll of someone, you're keeping that doll in a very special place. Especially if it's a love doll, you're keeping it in your underwear drawer. You know, you're not going to accidentally
or your underwear.
Break it. Yeah. If you're doing a cursing, something like that, you know, you may be keeping this in a shoebox filled with graveyard dirt.
Or the backside of your underwear.
It's very unlikely that you're going to accidentally do something. And if you do, you're not paying attention to what you're doing and you're not putting your heart into it. I wouldn't go around doing things half-heartedly. And if you do, you'll end up with things like that, in which case you may end up with problems, especially if that's somebody that you love. You know, they may end up with a leg problem or, you know, they may walk away from you because you've affected their legs. You know, you be very attentive with your work. Just because it's magic doesn't mean that it doesn't deserve the same kind of attention that, for instance, a medical doctor or a surgeon would give someone as they're doing surgery.
That was a very good explanation for that. And we are literally down to seconds for tonight. You know, folks, if you've enjoyed the show tonight, definitely watch on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places Facebook page. Watch the Folk Gonder page. Watch the Folk Faith Ministries page. We will be announcing out more of these coaching shows, more of the and the Reading Palooza is going to be coming up very soon. But there's the music. That is all the time that we have for tonight, everybody. I sincerely hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. And until next time we meet, keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. We invite you to join us next week when we'll be welcoming another outstanding guest. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystic Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at folkconjure.com and at folkconjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from folkconjure.com in North Carolina. Mystic Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
You know, huge shout out, Dr. Sweets. Hey, Maganda. Our friend JD, Miss Kayla Simmons, 21, Phyllis Margaret Gabor, Robert, and Troll T. Everybody that's joined us tonight, we do this show for y'all. So happy to have you here with us. Sincerely hope you enjoy this. Can't wait to see what the rest of 2024 is going to bring. And Reverend James, much thanks to you. Show wouldn't be the same without you.
Thanks.
Did I make you blush? Blessings, everybody. Have a great week.